We have a couple bills today. We'll change the order a little bit. We'll call up, open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 153. And Dennis, you want to just explain that real quick, like?
Senate Bill 153 authorizes the Board of Accountancy to contract with the National Association of State Boards of Accountancy, the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants, and a computer testing service for the administration of the computer-based certified public accountants exam, and authorize a testing service to collect fees incurred for administration of the exam. No revenue impact, and our witness, I'm told, will explain the possible fiscal impact.
Okay. Carol, would you like to come up? This is a continuation. You know, last week we heard one Senate Bills 148 through 152, and this bill is not assigned in that same group, so it's an accumulation, I think, of the accountancy bills that were being brought up. Is that correct?
That is correct, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Carol, please introduce yourself for the record.
My name is Carol Rees. I'm the administrator for the Board of Accountancy. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity to give you some information about Senate Bill 153. This bill is all about the Uniform CPA Examination, about which I'm sure you have heard over the years. This is a national examination. It's owned by the National Professional Association, and it is required for licensing as a CPA in every jurisdiction. It is currently a paper and pencil examination. It is offered twice a year. It is 2 days long, and there are four sections. Candidates must pass all four sections, and there are certain qualifying criteria as to how they receive credit for passing one section or more than one section. The AICPA, which is the National Professional Association, is converting their paper and pencil exam to a computer exam beginning in the year 2004. That would mean that the state boards of accountancy have two more paper and pencil examinations that we will be administering. Change over to the computer examination would be dramatic to the candidates and to state boards. For example, computer examination will be available 8 months out of the year, whereas now candidates are required to take it either in May or in November. Those are their only two options. Secondly, they can take the exam in any jurisdiction. They may apply in Oregon, but if they happen to live closer to Boise and there's a testing center in Boise, they may take it in Boise. New exam rules will make passing the exam, we think, I don't want to say easier, but more frequent. We think the candidates will pass the exam with fewer attempts at taking the exam because the new exam rules will provide much more flexibility to exam candidates. Last and certainly not the least important is the fact that this computer-based exam is going to be much more expensive for candidates. Currently, state boards of accountancy charge an application fee, as does the Oregon State Board, and that is the only cost to candidates. Under the new format, candidates will also be required to pay for the computer testing delivery service, that is, the little office out there with 10 or 12 computers in it where they go and sit for 3 and 4 hours at a time to take each section of the exam. For example, the current cost to an Oregon candidate to take four sections is $150. Under the computer exam, there will be an additional $470 to take four sections. That's going to increase the total price for four sections to $620. Those additional fees are not revenue to the board. They are not fees over which the board has any authority to change or alter. And the board does not wish to be a collection agent or have accountability for those fees. So the purpose of this bill is to authorize the testing service and the other organizations who have administrative fees to collect those fees themselves rather than require the board to collect them and pass them through. The alternative would be an artificially inflated budget on behalf of the board, both revenue and expenditures, because the majority of that money would be passed through funds, and it would require immense accounting for each of these candidates' fees that they owe and have paid or have not paid, besides the fact that we may become a collection agency and have some liability for fees that are not paid but which the computer services believe they have a right to receive. The purpose is to avoid these unnecessary expenditures and resources by the board and to limit the board liability when for these additional fees. The major change in this bill from current statute is that it authorizes the computer testing service to collect their own fees. We currently have authority in the statute to contract with other organizations, private or professional, for the administration of the exam and exam services. That would be sufficient to allow the board to contract with a computer testing service. What it doesn't provide for is the collection of those fees. And because of a concern that the board would be required to collect all those fees, we're asking for this amendment to ORS 673. I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Okay, any questions? Yes, Senator Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My mouth dropped open when you said the fees going up to $620. That's a huge increase, but from your testimony and the information you provided, it doesn't sound like you have any choice because the national board is going to this method and you have to hitch along for the ride or not take the exam. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair. Madam Walker, you're correct. Really, state boards have two choices here. The first choice is they could opt out of the uniform CPA exam, write their own exam, and administer it. This is an impossibility, resource-wise, and practically speaking, it would not work. The second choice would be that state boards may develop their own computer center, their own testing center for administering the exam as a computer-based exam. This also is not really within the breadth of expertise nor the resources that this state board has, nor would we want the continual update and maintenance of a computer facility. And even then, we would have to increase prices to pay for the cost of that facility, so prices would still go up. By using the computer-based service that AICPA has contracted with, we have the benefit of the security provisions they've already made, of the contract that they have with this association. Another disadvantage is no doubt those private contracts will increase maybe on an annual or a biannual basis for cost of living increases to the computer-based service. That would require this board, if we were responsible for collecting those fees, to increase our fee as those contractual fees increased. This is a burden that we don't think the board should be responsible to carry. So those are the only two choices state boards to have, and neither one of them is a practical.
It sounds like you have an offer you can't refuse.
I think you're right.
I would just hope that you tell your membership it's not our fault their fees are increasing.
It is our fault. Somebody's got to take responsibility.
No, it's not our fault.
Any other questions? Senator Barr, we're on 153. Senator Barr, 153.
No. Well, I assume if they're willing, if they're able to pass the exam, they'll know that this is a deductible business expense. So
they should know that.
If I may, Mr. Chair,
yes.
We also think that it may be less expensive in the long run for candidates to pass the exam because of the way they'll be able to take it. Under this new exam, they can take it section by section, and if they pass that section, they receive credit for it. Under the current procedure, they have to take all four sections and pass a certain number in order to receive credit for those. So it is not unheard of for a candidate to continue taking four sections over and over and over again and not quite achieving the pass requirements that are necessary. So if a candidate, for example, took the current exam six times at $150 apiece, is that what, $600, $750? So you're coming close already. So that would be an advantage for the candidate.
There's no other witnesses on the sign-up sheet. Mr. Rob Douglas, do you have any? Your folks are happy with all this? Life is good, eh?
Life is good.
I'm happy to hear that. Any further questions? Any further witnesses? We'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 153, open work section on 153. And any questions of the from the committee? If not, the chair would entertain a motion, or I would move. I'll just move that we pass 153 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any comments?
That's Senator Byers quickly reviewing the bill. I don't have any questions. I don't think we have They have a choice here.
No, it doesn't look like it.
No. Wait to see my stockbroker go later on.
Cool.
They only pay $15 a year.
Any further questions? Senator Breyer, are you reasonably comfortable with what's going on here?
No, I'm not comfortable, but that's okay.
Will the clerk call the roll?
Senator Breyer?
We're ready, as soon as that objection, then I won't have to actually vote for the thing out loud.
Well, I could do it that way. We'll just do it that way. Without objection, if there's no objection, the bill is passed. Senate Bill 153 is passed the floor with a two-pass recommendation under the consent calendar, and the chair will carry it.
I thought Senator Breyer might like to
carry. Yeah, I don't want to do that. Okay, we'll open up public hearing on Senate Bill 85. Dennis.
Senate Bill 85 would increase the amount of malt beverage that brewery public houses can produce and sell at wholesale from 500 barrels to 1,000 barrels. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact.
All right. Wow. There's a lot of people here. We have four witnesses. They all seem to be, none of them travel more than 100 miles. And if you're going to a fair position for this, how about Bill Perry and Paul Romaine and Jim Parker? Why don't you all three come up to the...
Well, we like things. Jamie can come up.
And Jamie, do you want to...
Yeah, we can probably...
Jamie's from my district.
Yeah, just get up there close, yeah.
We'll be quick.
Okay, sounds very good. All right. All right, on Senate Bill 85, how about some testimony here? Who wants to start out?
Okay, I'll start out. For the record, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Bill Perry. I'm Director of Government Relations for the Oregon Restaurant Association. This is a bill or a subject that started out 4 years ago in the OLCC liquor license rewrite, which I believe was House Bill 2982. The industry and the beer distributors reached an agreement to establish a 500, excuse me, any microbreweries that are under 500 barrels being able to self-distribute. At this point, it seems to have gone pretty smoothly, so with an agreement with the beer distributors and the industry, we have all decided to try to bump that up to 1,000. So with that, I think I'll let the other ones do it, but it's been around for 4 years and hasn't been any problems since that I know of.
Jim, you want to go?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Jim Parker, Executive Director of the Oregon Brewers Guild, and represent 42 breweries, associated wholesalers, retailers, and enthusiasts across the state. Basically, what this bill would do is increase the amount of beer that a startup brewery can sell without going through a wholesaler. I think Mr. Romaine will vouch that a lot of the wholesalers don't want to deal with the smaller breweries. It's a lot of excess stock, and in their startup phase, there's no telling how long they'll last, what brands they'll have. So it's more of a headache for the wholesalers to handle the product. This gives the small breweries a chance to build and establish a brand, and at the point they reach a certain point of production, they don't want to distribute their own beer anyway. They're brewers, not distributors. The 500 barrel limit seemed to have no impact, and I think we've reached an agreement that 1,000 barrels is the next logical step. One thing I do want to bring up, it doesn't have any impact on excise tax collection. In Oregon, the brewers pay the excise tax when the beer hits their tax determination tank, so there would be no way for tax not to get paid. So I think for once, this is one time when I get to sit up here and everybody's in agreement.
Introduce yourself.
Thank you very much, Chairman, and the rest of the committee. My name is Jamie Floyd, and I am the head brewer for Steelhead Brewing Company in Eugene, Oregon, and also the current president of the Oregon Brewers Guild. And I am here also representing the 42 breweries, including my own, and passing this current Senate bill. I think Jim did an excellent job of saying what our position is and all of that, and we're very happy to be here with Paul Romaine sitting next to us, the wholesalers, in support of what we're doing. The one thing that I would like to that I really came to say is that we did have one example with the 500 barrel limit, in which a small brewery in Portland named Laurel Wood opened up, and when the OLCC was determining its applicable licensing, decided based on the wording of the current bill that says that it's based on the year before's production as to whether or not you can distribute for yourselves, they decided that since there was no prior record that they couldn't distribute for themselves. Mostly this bill is put forward for small business opening, and you know, we would like to see it worded in a way that the OLCC can have the appropriate interpretation for it. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Romaine. I represent the Oregon Beer and Wine Distributors Association. We're in full support of Senate Bill 85. I think what Jamie was referring to just a bit ago was just a stupid error on the part of the Liquor Control Commission. It had absolutely nothing to do with reality. Obviously, if you haven't been in business, you would automatically qualify because the previous year you distributed zero. So you're obviously under 500 or would be under 1,000. I have no idea where that interpretation came from. I told Jamie to basically have a person call me if there was a problem. I'm sure that was just a simple error on the part of somebody at the Liquor Control Commission. The brew pub industry has been an experiment, a very successful experiment, frankly, in Oregon since 1985. At least 10% of all beer sold in Oregon is Oregon-produced micro. We have the most progressive laws in the country, at least the way we see it in the beer industry. In most states, you find that the brew pubs really can't distribute. They can't even get into the market. They have a hard time even existing. We took a much more progressive attitude in this state, and it's done wonders for the whole brewing industry. My term is that we've yuppified beer consumption, but it adds to tax rolls. It's a good product, and we think this bill is a good move forward in the industry, and we urge your support. Happy to answer any questions.
Yeah, well, it's interesting you're talking about that, because in Senator Metzger's Trade and Economic Development Committee, we had a report this morning talking about the microbrewery as a successful business in Oregon because some of the reasons you're talking about, and also it's a cluster type approach that people, you know, even though you're in competition, you do help each other out, and so it's a crucial part of our economic base.
Mr. Chair, what you find within the whole beer industry is within Oregon, and I think it's really the reason why we are light years ahead of any other state as far as brewing capacity here, and is an incredible amount of cooperation among the industry. You don't find one tier sort of fighting the other tier. You find them trying to figure out a way to make it all work for everybody. And we've been remarkably successful in doing that. Everybody has prospered under it. It doesn't guarantee success for anybody. We can't guarantee that the person opening up a brew pub down the street from you is going to actually produce something that people are going to want to buy. If any of you have seen the Henry Weinhardt's commercial this last year, you might notice sometimes there is some weird beer that's produced. Not very often. Most of it's usually good. But the industry has been very cooperative. It is a model. Just remember, no tax. Thank you.
any further? Senator Benz.
Well, on a side note, I was just thinking we have a question now for the CPA exam based on the OLCC example. You know, yeah. We have a question. If you brewed zero barrels of beer the year before, is that less than 500 barrels? Is that more than 500 barrels?
I mean, it's,
or is that zero barrels? But on a serious note, I would be very curious, which I hope I get an answer I'd like to hear anyway. With the change on from 500 to 1,000, my anecdotal thinking would say that maybe we have a number of small emerging breweries who are up against that limit and would like to, because their business is expanding. Yeah, I'd just be curious as to the breweries in this category that that would be affected by this because of increased business.
Number one would be Laurelwood. In their first year, they have reached the 500 barrel. They're at about 800, probably going to 1,000 next year. They're one of the big success stories in the state. Me and Pia's from Klamath Falls. Rod Cuchera was going to try and make it up here for this, but in addition to the brewery, they have a working farm there, and he's caught between both duties. They're also West Brothers in Eugene. They're, let's see, in Parkdale, Elliott Glacier. At least a handful, Golden Valley and McMinnville. So there are probably 8 to 10 breweries in that 500 to 1,000 range. And then there are a number more that are slightly larger than that, such as Jamie's Brewery, the Wild Duck, Bighorn here in Salem. They're in the 1,000 to 2,000 range that mostly have gotten on to the point where they do have wholesale arrangements.
Mr. Chair, Senator Metzger, you get to a point in the brewing business where it just becomes, you don't want to be in the wholesaling business and the brewing business. They really are two separate things, and so you end up contracting out. We're sort of feeling out that kind of magic number, if you would, and going at it so we don't offend anybody in the industry. 1,000 barrels is 2,000 kegs of beer, basically. So when you're talking about, it's 2,000 kegs. Right now we're at 1,000 kegs. In a big market like Portland, makes really no difference whatsoever. The problem is trying to bring everybody in the industry together in the small market areas, because all of a sudden you have somebody who is distributing 1,000 kegs or 2,000 kegs within a small market area. That makes a big impact on the market. So, you know, everybody's got their shares based on old, existing stuff, and you kind of play it gingerly. Mm-hmm. But again, I want to emphasize that what we've done in Oregon has been an incredible success story for the industry compared to any place else in the country. And we encourage you to work with us on it. Thank you.
Senator Roger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of you gentlemen could probably answer this. My sister lives out in Hop Country out by Mount Angel. So, she lives in Monitor, but nobody knows where that is except you. And I've seen the hops harvested at night. It's kind of fun. But if you have an increase in these breweries, you're going to have more hops brewing, and it just affects all of us. Yeah. And do you buy most of your hops here in Oregon?
Absolutely. We use a group called Hop Union, and they have their production facility actually in Yakima, but about half of the varieties that we use come directly from that very area you're talking about. In fact, I forget his first name, but Annan.
John.
John Annan, who's president of the Hop Growers Association.
Johnny?
Yeah!
I had the pleasure of speaking to the Hop Growers Association about a month and a half ago, and was very excited to see, you know, to connect on that level.
Yeah.
And also in the northeastern portion of Oregon, a good production, or I don't know about the percentage of production, but malt is also produced from barley that's grown out there in that part of the state, too. That's one of the things that's really made Oregon a champion beer state, and also gaining recognition on an international level, is because it's been a part of our heritage since the very beginning, and all the brewers are very proud to be able to use local ingredients for what we use.
That's great. See, this is economic development right here in our own state.
Right here, yeah.
Right in your district.
Yeah.
Any further questions? Anything else?
Cool.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Gary, and thank you, Jamie and Jim, and of course, Paul and Bill for coming in and testifying. And I appreciate you taking the time to come up here. We'll open up a work session on Senate Bill 85. Questions from the committee?
I'll move it to the floor.
Start brewing.
Okay, Senator Byer moves the floor to do pass recommendation. I don't think there's any need to take a worse one on this one either. So, are there any objections? No objections. The bill is passed in the floor with a due pass recommendation. Does anybody want to carry this?
Well, he wants to volunteer for this.
Senator Byer will carry this bill.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, folks, for coming.
Members of the committee, if you get to Eugene, do stop by the Steelhead Brewery. They have good beer.
Okay, well, that sounds really good.
Appreciate it.
And they have killer brownies.
Yeah, just for committee's information, Senator Metzger's Trade and Economic Development Committee is meeting and is hearing testimony on economic development and transportation, getting informational background. We're not doing that in the committee because we've got to figure you folks are experienced and